It's September 12th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. First up, for years, we have heard about dirty oil and dirty coal and dirty natural gas, all dirty because of their environmental record, plus their tie to foreign dictators. Well, today begins a five-part series on dirty green. We'll explore the debate of whether renewable energy is really the picture of purity that we are often so told about, or whether there are dirty secrets to the environment and connections to dictators abroad. Today, we kick off the series exploring solar panels, and that's coming up. As always, I'm keeping an eye out for developing stories. Put this one on your radar. An important update on the war of attrition in Ukraine. One about recent battles, and a second bit about a $60 billion bill that you are going to have to pay. And finally, the last thing before I let you go, it's a question from a listener who says that she doesn't know much about international affairs, but wonders if we can do more to hit Russia's pocketbook. But first, let's get started with today's main brief. Dirty Green, ladies and gentlemen, that is the new series that I will be doing here on the PDB, asking some important questions about renewable energy. And that's because to date, most of us have been told that renewable energy is green energy, and it has virtually no environmental costs, unlike oil and gas. Plus, it's free of national security concerns, like tying ourselves to foreign dictators in the Middle East and so forth. But is that true? Because if it is, I mean, that would be wonderful. I sort of picture America twirling around in green fields like Julie Andrews in a scene from The Sound of Music. But what if it's not true? What if renewable energy actually involves, say, mining in those green fields with slave labor? And Julie Andrews is a communist in Beijing, pumping out solar panels with dirty coal. In other words, what if the whole renewable enterprise is nothing but a mirage? A mirage that once you get close, you realize is just dirty green. Today we are going to begin unpacking all of those questions, and we are going to start with solar energy. Now, later this week, we will continue on with wind, batteries, mining for those batteries, and of course, the electric vehicles soon to be driving on our streets. But first, one editorial note here. As I and two other folks researched this, our goal wasn't to bash renewable energy. Instead, it was to look at the facts, the record, and give it the same treatment given to oil and coal and natural gas, and then let you decide what to think about it, and whether policymakers and the media are being honest with you and America. So with that, let's dive in. I want you to imagine that you have decided to install solar panels on your roof, but where did that panel come from? And I don't mean from your local installer. I mean the panel itself. Where did it originate? To answer that question, we have to start taking the panel apart, remove the frame, take apart the big black shiny glass-like module, and then look at the individual solar cells. But actually, you have to keep going deeper into those individual cells because they all had a chemical birth, and it's called polysilicon. Now, to understand this key ingredient, I want you to imagine you're making bread. Now, it's an imperfect analogy, but roll with me. In the place of dough, imagine you're making and rolling out polysilicon. Now, this material is made through a complex, sometimes dangerous process named after a German company. It's called the Siemens process. Now, I won't bore you with the intricate details here, but here's what you need to know. It takes a lot of energy and know-how to make this polysilicon dough. But for a long time, only European and American companies knew how to do it. It was almost like a trade secret. Then in about 2006, there was an Italian man who used to work in America, and he made a deal with a Chinese company called Daquan Group. He agreed to tell them how to make the secret polysilicon dough in exchange for a different kind of dough, big piles of cash. Now, he was an expert in the process, and he wasn't supposed to share the information, but he did it anyway. That's according to a report from National Public Radio back in July of last year. But regardless, the result of what he did and of China's stealing of our intellectual property for years before, well, it was the birth of a global solar revolution because China could suddenly dominate the market. And not because of that Siemens dough process, although that was critical, but rather because the Chinese company Daquan added a new ingredient. Very cheap electricity and very cheap labor. So a week ago during our Labor Day podcast, I told you about Xinjiang, China. It's a region in the very far western part of the country with two things in abundance. First, coal plants. Some of the greatest concentration of coal and coal plants in the world are in Xinjiang, and along with it, very cheap energy. So the second thing that Xinjiang has is slaves. The communists in Beijing have enslaved a group of people called the Uyghurs. They are ethnically different from other groups in China. They look different. They have a distinct culture, and they are Muslim as compared to the rest of the very atheist Chinese people. Well, all of that cheap energy and slave labor, it was like rocket fuel for creating cheap products of all kinds, from clothing to Christmas decorations, and yes, the polysilicon dough that is the foundation for creating solar panels. So how much of the world's polysilicon comes from China? Because that helps us answer the dirty green national security question. Again, if we're moving away from oil in the Middle East, where are we going to? Well, estimates vary, but most data from the U.S. Geological Service and Bloomberg News suggest around 75% of the world's supply of polysilicon comes from that one region of China, powered by coal and slaves. In the United States, by the way, we produce about 3%. Okay, so now that we have a foundation of our solar panel, the polysilicon dough, well, we have to keep baking and then slicing it up to enjoy it. That's the manufacturing process, as it were, for solar panels. So imagine that you've cooked your loaf of polysilicon. That loaf, by the way, is called an ingot in the manufacturing world of solar panels. But just like a loaf of bread, you have to slice it to properly enjoy it. Now, when you slice an ingot, you get wafers. And then with a bit more manufacturing, you get individual solar cells. Now, what's important for you to know here is that this manufacturing process is very, very energy intensive. That's why, once again, the cheap coal plants and the slaves in Xinjiang, China are so very important. Because not only do the communists control about 75% of the polysilicon supply, again, the loaves of bread, they control over 90% of the wafers and 85% of the solar cells, or in other words, the slices of bread. And that data is according to a Bloomberg News analysis from last year. All right, well, let's get back to our baking, shall we? So now that we have our solar cells, all those slices of bread, we start to stick them all together into sheets, kind of like squishing slices of bread together side by side. And that creates something called the modules. Now, those are, for our purposes, basically the end product, more or less. I mean, it's true that we need a metal frame to keep it all from falling apart. But the point here is that China controls that module market as well, about 82% of the world's supply. America makes only about 10%. So let's summarize our solar supply chain facts so far. 75% of the world's polysilicon comes from China, over 90% of the wafers, and 85% of the solar cells. And to make sure that we are all tracking, that does not mean energy independence, quite obviously. We are not getting away from Middle Eastern oil dictators. Rather, we are hitching our wagons to communists in China instead. Oh, and we should also remember two other dirty green environmental issues. First, coal is making everything that I've mentioned so far, from the polysilicon on downwards. Plus, along the manufacturing process, we have to add in copper and silver and zinc. And all that, of course, requires mining. And as we all know, mining is not exactly green. It requires massive amounts of electricity and diesel from oil and coal and natural gas. So the bottom line, folks, is that before we ever even put that solar panel on our roof, we have a nasty case of dirty green sponsored by slave labor in China. But we are not done with how dirty it really is. To understand why that's true, we have to refresh our memories from last week. America is not supposed to import goods from that Xinjiang area in China because of the slaves. Now, Joe Biden signed that into law. It's called the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act. And that was last December when he signed it. And of course, China knows that. So what they've done, in fact, what they've encouraged, is for their solar companies to move final production to other nations in Southeast Asia to avoid this new law. Specifically, they are moving to Vietnam, Thailand, and Cambodia. And then Chinese companies slap on a new label that says definitely not made in China, wink, wink, and then puts them on ships that run on diesel, of course, and chug over to America. And then we put those panels on diesel-operated trains and trucks. And then you put it on your roof. Probably not aware that you have just contributed to a global dirty green problem. But this last bit does actually raise somewhat of a question about solar panels getting here from Southeast Asian nations like Thailand. Since we obviously know that that's happening, why aren't we stopping it? Well, there's one reason for that. Joe Biden is letting it happen. So here's what we know. Back in June, the Commerce Department in this country was investigating Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia for this cheating Chinese issue. But Joe Biden put a stop to that investigation. Specifically, he issued a declaration saying that we have an emergency, a climate emergency, and that justified an effective end to the investigation. Now, it's true, the investigation will continue, but nobody in Thailand or the other countries will be punished if they are caught cheating. According to CNBC reporting, senior Biden officials described this declaration as creating a quote-unquote bridge, temporarily allowing cheap foreign solar panels made by slaves to flood into the United States in order to speed up the transition to quote-unquote clean energy. Now, to be fair, Joe Biden says that over the next couple of years, there will be a new solar supply chain built up here at home. And that's because he passed the $380 billion Inflation Reduction Act that included billions of incentives to get it done. But is he right? Will that actually happen? Well, in 2 years' time, not a chance. Industry analysts predict that it'll take anywhere from 5 to 15 years, some say 20, to build out an America-only supply chain, from the polysilicon dough to the cutting of the loaf, again, the ingots and the wafers, and then final assembly of the panels themselves. So that is the deal with the devil that Joe Biden has made, one that either, frankly, is not going to work or will take at least a decade or more. Now, before we wrap up today's brief, we have one final dirty green fact to talk about. China's solar panels, well, actually most solar panels, have a lifespan of about 10 to 15 years. And then they get taken down and, well, thrown away in a dump, where studies have shown that they leach toxic chemicals. And if that dump isn't properly sealed, those solar panel chemicals will soak into the groundwater, water that we will eventually drink or put on our lawns or our irrigated crops. There are efforts to figure out recycling programs. I briefed you back on July 15th about this challenge following a report from the LA Times. But to refresh our memories here, even though California has been installing solar panels for 20 years, and they now have millions of panels set to retire, well, they sort of forgot about recycling. Well, there have been some efforts to kickstart recycling, but they've got an economics problem. A study by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory estimated that it would cost about $1 to $2 per solar panel to send it to a landfill. But to recycle that solar panel, that's going to take you $20 to $30 per panel, and you're only going to get about $2 to $4 back in recycled material. And so for now, California trucks most of those old panels to Arizona to get recycled, using diesel-powered dump trucks, by the way, or they just send them directly to landfills in California, which may or may not be sealed to then prevent leaching. Oh, dear. And that, folks, ends the presentation of facts and puts us into analysis. So what do we think about all of this? Well, if you were in the White House this morning with these facts in hand about dirty green energy, here is what I would encourage you to consider. Are you surprised about how dirty solar panels are? Because most Americans probably would be. And that's wrong. We deserve the truth about dirty green energy just as we do dirty oil or dirty coal. When the American people drive down a road and they see solar panels on houses or in fields, everybody should know something. Those solar panels should not fill your head with images of a pure, twirling Julie Andrews from The Sound of Music. Americans should know that buried inside of those panels are metals mined from around the world with oil and gas and diesel. They should know that the panels are almost certainly made by slave labor from hands belonging to a persecuted group called the Uyghurs. They should know that the panels are made in foreign factories powered by coal, And eventually, most of those panels are slipped into America by cheating Chinese companies with fake labels from Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia, all while making the communists billions of dollars. And by the way, Joe Biden doesn't seem to care about that. In fact, he sees them as, quote, a helpful bridge. Ah, and not to be forgotten, in about 10 to 15, maybe 20 years' time, we will have hundreds of millions of solar panels that will have to come down, probably sent to your local landfill. And sadly, the chemicals and materials inside those panels will leach. Now, if you're unlucky, that poison will go straight into your drinking water and the water that irrigates our crops. And then we will have a silent crisis popping up in city after city. So what do we do about all of this? Well, that's the second step, and it'll come. But first, we have to educate ourselves about the facts. And the facts are, ladies and gentlemen, that solar energy is very, very dirty. It's September 13th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. First up, it's day two of this week's series called Dirty Green. We're asking whether renewable energy is really green or instead there are environmental and national security costs that people would rather we not discuss. Now, yesterday we talked about dirty solar, and my goodness, is it dirty. Today we are talking about wind energy, and we have some dirt to discuss. That's coming up. As always, I'm keeping an eye out for developing stories. Put these two on your radar. First, an update on last week's story out of California and the new law increasing fast food workers' minimum wage to $22 an hour. Second, most Americans want less immigration. That's the finding of a new poll from Gallup. We'll discuss it. And finally, the last thing before I let you go, a question from a very cranky listener who doesn't like what I have to say about China and climate change. But first, let's get started with today's main brief. It is day two of Dirty Green, this week's series looking at renewable energy. And we are focused on this issue for one simple reason. Whether you like it or not, America is radically changing. We are being forced to drop oil and gas and coal for solar and wind. And that's because proponents of this idea say that climate change is an existential crisis. And that's why we need renewable energy. It'll stop climate change, they say. Plus, it's largely without environmental costs or national security concerns. But is that true? Well, yesterday we talked about dirty solar. And as it turns out, it is very dirty indeed. Well, today we are talking about wind energy. And it's got its own set of dirty challenges, too. So let's dive in. I want you to imagine you are looking at a standard wind turbine or windmill, as some people would say, and that could be either onshore or offshore, out in a lake or the ocean. And what you see generally are three main parts. You've got the tower, the blades, and the nacelle. And that last part, the nacelle, it's the hollow part that houses the generator and the drivetrain, the guts of the thing. Well, the tower and the nacelle actually don't give us too many dirty green problems. On the national security front, both can be and are made here in America. The blades, too, although we do have a national security problem with the offshore blades. More on that in a minute. But that is where the good news ends for wind energy, because now we have to focus on the blades, and those have some very dirty green problems. Now, they've got a lifespan of about 10 years when wind farm operators tend to upgrade their turbines, depending on weather and market conditions. But what are we to do with those old retired blades? Because these things are huge. General Electric's Haliad X blade is the size of a football field in length. And you have to have three of those on each tower, plus hundreds or thousands of towers, all coming down every 10 years or so. Well, you have a dirty green problem. Blades can be made of different things, it's true, but they share the same core issue. You can't really recycle them. Now, there are people trying. Dozens of attempts are underway by the U.S. government, manufacturers, all trying to figure out a solution. They're trying to pulverize them, burn them, crush them, melt them. But for now, there's only one real cheap solution. Bury them. In Lake Mills, Iowa, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Casper, Wyoming. The landfills just outside of those cities have been turned into America's dirty green dumping ground. Hundreds and soon to be thousands, tens of thousands of blades will be buried there under 30 feet of earth and left to sit there forever. Those communities will always bear that legacy. Now, to emphasize, the wind energy knows they've got this dirty green problem with blades, and they're looking for solutions. But according to wind energy giant Vestas, they're hoping to solve it by the year 2040. So we've got 25 years or so of burying tens of thousands of blades. But that's not the only dirty green problem that we've got with those blades. There are many more. Let's consider those massive offshore blades made by General Electric, the ones as big as football fields. On July 20th, I briefed you on this concern, in fact, but to refresh our memories, these blades are so big and so specialized that they require a very particular ship and a very special crew to take the blades and the towers out to sea and install them. Unfortunately, America doesn't have any of those ships. In fact, there are only four that can handle these big boy blades, and none of them are American flagged. So we will have to rely on foreign ships with foreign crews operating on a budget of around $200,000 a day. But you know what? That might not matter, because we may not have these blades to install anymore. Last Wednesday, a federal judge in Boston ruled that General Electric can no longer manufacture or sell their big offshore blades because of a patent infringement issue with a Spanish company. Now, interestingly, the judge in the case is going to let GE wrap up two projects with these knockoff blades because, quote, the world is currently facing a rapidly developing climate crisis. Delaying large-scale wind energy projects can impact efforts to combat this crisis, end quote. Which is a really great way to pivot this conversation to the environmental costs of wind farms. And it really comes down to three things. They are ugly, they are noisy, and they kill animals. So let's talk about the animals first, birds specifically. So good data is really hard to come by on this, in part because counting birds, the dead ones, turns out to be kind of tricky business. So varmints of all kinds will pick them up on land, or the carcasses will sink to the ocean floor. Still, there have been a couple studies that have estimated that anywhere from 140,000 to 570,000 birds are killed in the U.S. each year because of wind turbines. Again, 500,000 birds. But as biologists have highlighted, it's not just the numbers. It's the types of birds that matter, too. Losing small numbers of endangered birds, some specific eagles in California, for instance, has made a big impact on the overall population. But it's not just birds that we should talk about. For offshore wind projects, it endangers a host of other animals, too. Consider a project close to Santa Barbara, California, and another more remote site off of Humboldt County in Northern California. So the coastal shelf drop-off into deep Pacific waters will require developers for these projects to build turbines on floating platforms attached to the seabed by cables, rather than the turbines' towers directly bolted to the ocean floor. So this will cause a host of problems. For instance, for area fishermen, their nets and lines will more likely get caught up in the floating platform's cables. But according to the National Wildlife Federation and the Natural Resources Defense Council, both environmental groups, it'll also affect sea turtles and sharks and other species that will get caught on the platform's anchoring lines and other cables. Now, these groups also want the blades, these offshore blades, to stop spinning for entire months at a time during high-risk periods for migrating birds. So, folks, wind turbines have a dirty green problem with animals of all kinds. They are, in fact, killers, as it turns out, and that hurts the heart. Which takes us to our final dirty green fact this morning. Another hurt, but this time on the eyes and the ears. Wind farms are ugly, and they are noisy. Now, how ugly or noisy they might be, well, that is in the eye and the ear of the beholder. But to help us think about this issue, I want you to ask yourself this. When you look out at the ocean, is there any value in just seeing the ocean? Or if you're in a prairie, is there any value to just seeing a prairie? Now, most reasonable people will say, yeah, nature has value, even if it's not doing anything for us. By just being untouched, unspoiled, it gives us value. And we have some pretty famous cases of environmentalists and politicians saying exactly this. When Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts was alive, he and his family were absolutely opposed to the Cape Wind project because, well, it was ugly. They liked the ocean views from their house on the beach. But it's not just the Kennedys or in Massachusetts. There has been deep opposition just like it for the same aesthetic reasons in desert towns of California's San Bernardino County, the San Diego backcountry, eastern Washington state, the San Francisco Bay Area, Nevada's Mormon Mesa, and in Laramie, Wyoming. All because the wind farms are ugly and noisy, and people don't want that stuff in their backyard. And actually, one final note on that, and it's a nice way to wrap up the facts of this morning's brief. A 2019 study sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy found that most homeowners embrace wind farms. They just don't want to live next to them. Although, opposition does lessen the more that those homeowners were given cash. And that, folks, ends the presentation of data and facts this morning and puts us into analysis. So what do we think about all this? Well, here's what I would encourage you to consider. There is no such thing as clean energy. It all has costs, doesn't it? We saw that yesterday with solar, an industry tied to slave labor, communist manufacturers, and a president who doesn't particularly care about either of those things, so long as we get those solar panels. And we're seeing it with wind energy too. Wind blades that spin for about 10 years, killing hundreds of thousands of birds, maybe the platforms that they're on, killing some sea turtles too. And then when the blades are done spinning and the energy companies come to take them down, well, we're not really sure what to do with them. Now, it's true that by the year 2040 or so, we should have some recycling programs ironed out. But until then, they get buried. Now, not in your backyard or mine, of course. Studies in common sense tell us that we don't want that dirty green waste in our community. Just put it in somebody else's backyard. Now, none of this is unique to wind energy or solar, for that matter. Oil and gas have its sins, too. But we don't hear a lot about dirty green, do we? Nobody is showing the hundreds of thousands of dead birds like we would see after an oil tanker runs aground and we have oil-soaked seagulls. Instead, green energy has this Julie Andrews-like reputation twirling around in green fields like in The Sound of Music. And that's very curious. Why aren't we being told how dirty green energy is? Why aren't journalists and the media covering this like an oil spill? Well, that is the point, folks, of this entire series. And it's why here on the PDB, I'm going to keep bringing you the dirty green facts. Tomorrow, we're actually talking about mining for the batteries, batteries that are so critical for solar and wind energy to be useful. And then, as always, you can decide what to think of it all. You can decide if dirty green energy is worth it. Or maybe we should proceed with a bit more caution and a lot more honesty. Coming up, ladies and gentlemen. It's September 14th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. First up, Joe Biden is slated to be in Michigan today, celebrating electric vehicles and green energy. But what he probably won't be celebrating are all the dirty green secrets buried inside those cars. Secrets that the PDB is sharing all this week. Today, we are talking about probably the most dirty secret of all. Mining for the minerals that go into the batteries, all that fuel the dirty green revolution. That's coming up. As always, I'm keeping an eye out for developing stories. Put this one on your radar. We've got a potential railroad strike to talk about, and it could make our bad inflation much, much worse. And finally, the last thing before I let you go, a personal message about the ads that you hear on the PDB and what they say about me. But first, let's get started with today's main brief. Joe Biden will be in Detroit today to help kick off the North American International Auto Show. He's expected to highlight how his $380 billion climate change bill is driving what the White House is calling, quote, an electric vehicle manufacturing boom. And what a perfect opportunity then for us to talk about Dirty Green. That is this week's series here on the PDB about the hidden costs of the renewable energy revolution. As listeners know, the goal here isn't to degrade solar and wind and electric vehicles. Rather, it's to treat these dirty industries no different than oil and gas and coal. On Monday, we tackled dirty solar. Yesterday was dirty wind. And today, we are going to talk dirty minerals from mining. So let's dive into it. I want you to imagine that you've got a big battery sitting in your backyard. Now, I don't mean the little ones like in your electronics gear or even the larger ones in your gas-powered car. Instead, I want you to imagine the really specialized batteries that run electric vehicles for hundreds of miles or store the energy from solar panels and wind turbines. These are generally called lithium-ion batteries. And without these special batteries, the dirty green industry is dead on arrival. And why is that? Well, the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow, so we need those batteries to offset the slow days. All right, so looking at our big battery in our backyard, I want you to imagine that we take it apart and really dig deep, all the way down to the minerals inside that make it work. Now, there's some chemistry involved here, different types of batteries, and frankly, it can kind of be a little bit confusing. But what you really need to know is that there are a few important minerals buried inside that specialized battery. And the two minerals that we are going to talk about this morning are lithium and cobalt. So where do those come from? Well, the earth. We have to mine them. And by simple reasoning, we know that the mining process is a dirty process. Massive amounts of electricity, normally created by coal, and some really big earth-moving equipment powered by diesel. Plus, there can sometimes be a release of pollutants that were otherwise buried in the ground. And also, during the refining process, we can pollute or overuse groundwater. Finally, we also know that mines, well, are not especially pretty to look at. That's why most of us would rather not live next to one, just like an oil rig or a coal mine. And that takes us to our first big, dirty green problem, focused on mining lithium. So America has lots of this mineral, actually, the fourth largest reserves in the world, about 9.1 million tons, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. But oddly, we only have one lithium mine, just outside of Silver Peak, Nevada. But we have other potential locations, too, in California, Arkansas, and North Carolina. But unfortunately, plans to exploit those areas are under attack by environmentalists and indigenous groups and Democrats, all because of the reasons that I just mentioned. They're just too dirty. Let me give you a specific example. America's largest known lithium deposit is along the border of Nevada and Oregon. It's called the Thacker Pass. In 2021, the Trump administration approved plans for a $1 billion mine at that site, but it's facing fierce resistance. Environmental groups and local indigenous tribes are claiming that the mine would threaten local wildlife and could potentially contaminate local water sources. If all of this sounds familiar, it should. Remember when we talked about NIMBY? It's an acronym that stands for Not in My Backyard. And that's how people feel with solar panel farms and windmills for miles. Well, the NIMBY effect is true for dirty green minerals, too, which creates a real pickle. The greenies want us to use lithium, all for the batteries and their green revolution, but they don't want us to mine lithium, at least not in their backyard. So where do our green friends want us to go? Well, two places, Australia and South America. Now, Australia is a good friend of ours, at least for now, and that's good because they are the largest lithium-producing country in the world, around 55,000 metric tons of the stuff, double that of its closest competitor. But it's not going to be enough. As Joe Biden and states like California want more solar and wind and electric vehicles, well, that means that the world will need dramatically more lithium. Experts project a six-fold increase in demand by 2030. And since the greenies won't let us mine here in the U.S., we have to go somewhere else beyond Australia, and that is South America. The vast majority of lithium in that continent is found in an area that is fittingly referred to as the Lithium Triangle. It's a region that straddles Chile and Argentina and Bolivia. Now, here is something that you might not know. This area is one of the driest on Earth. They get about a quarter inch or so of moisture each year. That presents a major problem because lithium mining requires a considerable amount of water, about 500,000 gallons needed to produce just a single ton. Now, as you might guess, the locals, especially the indigenous people in that area, are upset about efforts to open and expand lithium mines in the region. It's estimated that mining activities have already consumed about 65% of the region's water, and they don't want to use any more. Now, in addition to the stress on the water supply, there are also concerns about contamination, especially in this isolated area. Lithium utilizes a number of toxic chemicals like hydrochloric acid in the mining process, and there have been some horrific mining accidents when folks weren't exceptionally careful. You can explore the Upper Tibet disaster in 2016 if you want to see what that looks like. But the bottom line, this is a dirty green process. Okay, let's pause for a moment and transport ourselves back to our yards. I want us to look down at that battery that we dug into to explore those two minerals. One, of course, was lithium that we just discussed. The other is cobalt. So let's explore what we know about cobalt. And I've got a warning. This one is not just dirty. It is infuriating and it is heartbreaking. When it comes to cobalt, there are two countries that have an iron grip on the market. One is China. More on that in a second. But the real kingmaker of cobalt is in Africa. And smart PDB listeners know it well because I briefed you on it before regarding violence with neighboring country Rwanda. Do you remember the country? That's right. The Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC. Now, the DRC has long been known for its natural wealth. My goodness, they've got diamonds and gold, copper, tin, uranium, and lots of lithium. In fact, DRC is to lithium as Saudi Arabia is to oil. DRC alone produces more than 70% of the world's cobalt. But actually, that analogy doesn't quite grasp how important DRC is. So consider this. The top three producers of oil on the planet are the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Russia. So combined, they only produce about 40% of the world's oil, while DRC has 70% of the world's cobalt. So how is the DRC getting this mineral out of the ground? Well, the majority of it is coming from large-scale commercial mining operations. And the problem here is that over half of these DRC mines are owned, controlled, or financed by, well, you guessed it, China. But the real heartbreaker here is when we look at what are referred to as artisanal mines. These are small-scale operations that account for about 15 to 30% of DRC's total cobalt production, and they are subject to virtually no regulation and no oversight. And that's turned things into a Wild West fight of who controls what. Frequent conflicts, sometimes armed and violent, and sometimes between tribes and local businessmen. Well, the workers are often caught in the middle. And here is the very sad part. The workers are often children. According to an estimate from the Wilson Center, of the 255,000 Congolese people mining for cobalt, 40,000 are children, some as young as 6 years old. They're simply lowered into the mines, and they use their hands to claw at the dirt. Now, sometimes they've got a rudimentary shovel or a pick, but mostly their hands, all to extract the cobalt. As you can imagine, this practice has led to many injuries and deaths. Kids falling and breaking limbs inside the mines, or I'm sorry to say, buried alive when the mines cave in. And for their efforts, they earn less than $2 a day. And you know what, folks? That's not just dirty green. That's horrifying. And that is what is going into the electric vehicles that Joe Biden will likely highlight to you today. And it's also in the batteries that collect the solar power and the wind power. Now, of course, Joe Biden and the environmental community know all of this. They know where the world's cobalt comes from. And they know that this problem is only going to get worse. Cobalt demand is expected to nearly double in the next 5 years. And 70% of that growth will come from the electric vehicle sector that Joe Biden is so proud of. You may want to keep that in mind today. I suspect that he won't mention it. And that, folks, ends the presentation of data and facts this morning. And it puts us into analysis. So what do we make of all of this? The lithium and the cobalt? Well, here's what I would encourage you to consider. Yesterday, I mentioned that there's no such thing as cost-free energy. And I hope you are seeing how much that is true of dirty solar and dirty wind. And as of this brief, dirty minerals. And so we are seeing two profound costs with these dirty minerals. First, for decades, America has battled for energy independence. We have sent generations of our young people to wars in the Middle East for oil. And finally, through the advent of fracking for oil, we became energy independent. We became the world's largest oil producer. And now we're trading it away for both lithium and cobalt. We are putting our country's future in the hands of Australia and China, DRC, and some nations in South America. And if you think that we won't be sending our kids to wars in some of those countries at some point to secure what is the new oil, just like we did in the Middle East, well, frankly, I think that that is wishful thinking indeed. Look, I defer to you all on how you feel about that, but as someone who's lost friends in the war on terror in the Middle East, which was frankly for oil, I'll tell you that I think Joe Biden's dirty green revolution is an outrage when it comes to national security and protecting our young people, especially those in uniform. But what's equally awful, disgusting actually, is that we have these minerals in America, lithium especially, but some cobalt too, in Idaho actually. But what Democrats and environmentalists have said is, no thanks, don't mine it. It's too dirty, they say. Not in my backyard, they say. Instead, just get it from the Congo, knowing full well that China controls half of those mines, while part of the other half, well, they're full of children, 6 years old, making $2 a day. That's quite something for a group of Americans on the left who fancy themselves as humanitarians and environmentalists. Folks, as always, I defer to you, but I think you can hear the passion in my voice on this brief. Because I am tired of people and movements holding themselves up like they are wiser and more anointed than the rest of us, when in fact they are not. When in fact they are very, very dirty people pushing a very dirty cause, and they don't want you to know about it. Now, I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope that Joe Biden talks about how dirty the Green Revolution is, and the folks on Capitol Hill too, and all the journalists in America. But I'd bet a month's paycheck that they won't. But I'll tell you what, I will. And we will. Because whatever you decide to think or do about this dirty green problem, it will be based on a set of fair and brutal facts. Because that's what the actual President's Daily Brief is all about. The president has to know the full story. And that's what this podcast is about too. The full story. No matter how dirty it gets. Coming up. It's September 15th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. First up, we've got the final brief today on Dirty Green. That's this week's series on whether renewable energy is as green as proponents say, or if instead it's full of dirty secrets. Today we are talking batteries, and I mean everything from the refiners, the manufacturers, and what happens when these specialized batteries stop working? Well, here's a hint. They're starting fires and causing over $1 billion in damages. That's coming up. As always, I'm keeping an eye out for developing stories. Put this one on your radar. The pending railroad strike is one day closer to happening. It's an hour-by-hour cliffhanger, and I've got the latest, including how Queen Elizabeth's funeral could throw a monkey wrench into solving the crisis. But first, let's get started with today's main brief. Today is the fourth and final part of our series, Dirty Green, which has explored the environmental, humanitarian, and national security costs of renewable energy. The goal is always is not to degrade solar and wind resources, but to hold them to the same standard as other forms of energy, like oil and gas and coal. Well, yesterday we talked about dirty minerals, the stuff that goes inside the batteries that are so critical to renewable energy and electric vehicles. And as you all heard yesterday, those minerals, lithium and cobalt in particular, are really dirty for America. They have to be mined in other countries. And in some cases, the miners are little children, some only 6 years of age. When we kicked off our conversation yesterday, we did it by imagining that we had a battery in our backyard, and we tore it apart to find those two key minerals inside. But today, we are going to put that battery back together again, because the process of doing so, the refining of the minerals, the manufacturing of the battery cells and the battery packs, and then the recycling of the dead batteries, well, that entire life cycle involves a whole new set of dirty problems. So let's get started. As we put our battery pack back together again, the first challenge is to get those minerals back inside. Mostly lithium, some cobalt, a bit of nickel, depending on the chemistry of the battery. The problem is we can't just jam some lithium or cobalt rocks into our battery. We have to refine those minerals, make them more pure, just like you have to refine oil to get gas. But unfortunately, refining lithium and cobalt is a very difficult and specialized process. We have to remove other minerals that we don't want mixed in. For instance, lithium tends to be found with deposits of magnesium and calcium. So we have to strip that stuff out all at a refinery. And boy, is that an expensive and dirty process. Huge amounts of energy required, plus lots of different kinds of chemicals, which means that you need to have some very cheap energy and lots of cheap labor to do it. So where in the world do you think as a combination of those two things? Well, I've got a hint. Remember when we talked about the Xinjiang province and the enslaved Uyghur people? That's right, China. China has lots of cheap energy and lots of cheap labor. And the energy is all powered by coal. And that's why Beijing controls 80% of the world's refining for raw materials like cobalt and lithium. Even if those minerals are mined in places like the Congo, they still get shipped to China to refine them. And just to underline the point here, China accounts for about 65% of global refined cobalt. The next closest country is Finland at 10%. Here in the United States, cobalt refinement is basically zero. Now, to be fair, there are efforts to fix this, at least with lithium. Tesla has announced recently that they want to build a lithium refinery in Texas. There are also other announced plans for refineries in Tennessee, plus a couple of other southern states. But these will likely take years to permit and construct if environmental groups and others don't successfully sue to stop them, just like they have elsewhere in America. Okay, let's go back to our imaginary battery. Let's say that we have bought some of that refined lithium and cobalt and nickel all from China. Our next step is manufacturing the physical battery itself, requiring over a dozen plus parts and pieces, plus new materials. So the details here get a little bit technical. You'll hear words like cathode and anode, terminals and anti-explosion valves. But the real thing that you need to know is that there is one country who dominates the manufacturing process. Guess which one? Yeah, it's China. And all because of that cheap energy and the cheap labor. Last year, about 80% of all lithium-ion batteries that entered the global marketplace came from China. But once again, to be fair, there are lots of big companies jumping into the market here in America to try to build American-made capacity. In July, for instance, Panasonic announced a battery factory in Oklahoma, with another one possibly in Kansas. LG Energy is looking at a factory in Ohio. We can expect more of these kinds of announcements in no small part because of Joe Biden's $380 billion climate change bill. It had lots of incentives to build out this battery capacity. And that means that over time, we could have more domestic battery supply to work with, well, pending all the lawsuits. But remember, China and other countries like the Congo still control the lithium and cobalt mines, just like we talked about yesterday. They control the new oil, to say it a bit differently. And China still controls the refining process, as I just mentioned. So that means that even if we build more manufacturing capacity of batteries here at home, well, we still have a very dirty problem. For years to come, we will still be reliant on foreign, dirty, green energy. All right, folks, the brief up until now has addressed the mining, the refining, and the manufacturing of our batteries. But there's one more thing that we need to talk about, and it's pretty dirty. Batteries degrade over time, and eventually they give out. And we all know that. But just how long these lithium-ion batteries last? Well, that's going to depend on a number of factors. But as a baseline, Elon Musk of Tesla has said that his car's batteries will last around 1,500 charge cycles, or between 300 and 500,000 miles. For the average American driver, that's about 25 years. Although, there are a lot of social media posts from Tesla drivers saying that Elon Musk is full of it. There is one very famous report of a Tesla driver in Finland actually blowing up his car when he was told that a new battery pack would cost him $26,000 after only 10 years of use. But either way, what happens to these batteries after they have served their purpose? Well, the answer is, we don't really know yet. Many countries are beginning to develop recycling programs, but that's already proving to be very problematic. A lithium-ion battery isn't recyclable in the same way that paper or glass might be. Most of the batteries that are recycled undergo a very high-temperature smelting process, and that requires a lot of energy. And that's why at present, the world only recycles around 5% of these batteries. And even when we do, only around half of the materials can be extracted and repurposed. Much of the rest is ending up in landfills. And that poses a major health risk because the materials could be toxic. For example, cobalt is a possible carcinogen that causes cancer. It can also cause asthma and pneumonia. Meanwhile, another component in batteries, nickel, has been shown to cause lung and nasal cancers, reduced lung function, and bronchitis. In other words, this stuff leaches into the ground or it gets burned into the air, and it can lead to very serious environmental and health concerns. By the way, if you're wondering who on earth would burn a battery, well, you might be surprised. Batteries don't need an arsonist to set them afire. The chemistry inside batteries actually causes them to burst into flames all on their own. According to a study out of California, 65% of all fires at waste facilities in that state were started by batteries. And 40% of those were started by lithium-ion batteries. We've also seen fires in garbage trucks and in landfills across the country. We have estimates that in the U.S. and Canada, the fires from lithium-ion batteries are costing operators over $1.2 billion annually. Now, as always, to be fair, the renewable energy industry knows that it has a dirty battery problem. 2 weeks ago, the Department of Energy issued a request for information to ask for public input on how to spend over $300 million for ideas on how to recycle batteries. The private sector is actually trying to figure this out, too. There's a company called Ascend that's got a recycling facility in Covington, Georgia, that promises that it's got a great fix for this problem. And it's actually attracting some investors, but we just don't know yet if it's going to work out on a big enough scale. But no matter what, we are going to find out. And that's because the dirty green industry, from solar to wind, from mining to batteries, well, folks, it is here to stay, whether we like it or not. And that, folks, ends this morning's presentation of data and facts around batteries. And it wraps up this week's special series on dirty green energy. Coming up next, we are going to dive into some analysis of this week's series. I'll give you my views, but as always, it'll be up to you to decide. We'll be right back. It is fall, and that means two things. First, I open up my windows at night. And second, yeah, I freeze everybody out, and we fight over the thermostat. But not this year, because everybody's getting Boll & Branch bedding, the sheets that get softer, more comfortable with every wash. Now, it's a mystery how that works, just like the Bermuda Triangle, but it doesn't matter because Boll & Branch sheets are hands down the best sheets that I have ever slept in. Now, for what it's worth, I think their trick is that they are well-made and they use high-quality organic threads. That's a good thing because you can get Boll & Branch bedding in all sorts of sizes and colors and styles, along with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, folks, go to BollAndBranch.com. That's B-O-L-L. andbranch.com. Enter promo code Brian, that's Brian with a Y, get 20% off your first set of sheets and free shipping when you use that promo code Brian at bollandbranch.com. So who needs a good night's sleep, folks? You do. Buy these sheets at bollandbranch.com. We talk a lot on the podcast about economic issues, things like inflation, interest rates, a recession. Folks, it's a difficult time. If you've been considering ways to diversify your investments, consider gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts. All it takes to get started is a short phone call, and they'll have physical gold or silver delivered right to your door or your IRA or 401k. They're the highest-rated firm in the country with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and have thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver. So call 866-292-2990 or text PDB, that's the show's letters, to 998899. Again, that's toll-free 866-292-2990 or text PDB to 998899. Welcome back to the PDB. And what an awesome week it's been. A week full of dirty green knowledge. It's been a fair but tough look at the renewable energy industry that is, it's so often described as green and without cost or no consequence, certainly as compared to oil and gas and coal. But as you've hopefully seen these past 4 days, that's just not true. It has profound environmental, humanitarian, and national security costs, rarely discussed, sadly. So all in all, what do we make of this? Well, if you were in the White House this morning, my final and wrap-up opinion would be this. All forms of energy come with a cost, and that means that we have to make hard choices based on facts. But it doesn't seem like this conversation is especially balanced or fair or based on, frankly, many facts at all. Proponents of dirty green energy, like solar and wind, rarely, if ever, acknowledge their shortcomings. So, why is that? Well, as you answer that question, here's my response. I think we're caught in a panic, a hysteria. And I mean that in the clinical sense. So many of our politicians and pundits and activists are so profoundly convinced that climate change is both real and existential that our solutions don't really need to be based about science or reason or facts anymore. We're just in the middle of anxiety and panic, and we just need to do something, anything. And so we are. We're buying solar panels that are almost exclusively made by coal plants and slave labor in China with no plan on how to recycle them. That's actually the solution that people are proposing. We're putting up wind turbines that kill upwards of 500,000 birds each year with the blades the size of football fields that have to be buried in the backyards of poor communities around the country. That's actually the solution that people are proposing. And finally, we are swapping out our energy independence for lithium and cobalt mines in Chile and the Congo, mines that are owned and operated by the Chinese or staffed by six-year-old kids working in the mine shafts. That is actually the solution that people are proposing. Now, I think that reasonable folks can disagree about all of this, but earnestly, tell me if those sound like smart policies, or rather those made by a people caught in a panic. Now, there is one thing that this series this week didn't touch on, and it is so very critical to this debate. How reliable is this dirty green technology? Because, you know what, maybe all these horrible things about using slave labor and paying child miners and destroying the environment, well, maybe they're all worth it. If we can both solve the climate crisis and still manage to have enough electricity to switch on our lights and run our economy. But is that true? Will renewable energy be able to consistently and reliably run modern life, plus solve the climate issue? Well, we actually have part of the answer. For years, Europe has been the world's leader in switching from traditional energy to renewables. Back in 2010, the German government embraced something called the Energy Turnaround Program. It promised to shut down the coal and the gas and the nuclear plants and build solar and wind in their place. And that's exactly what they did. So, where is Europe now? Where is Germany and France right at this very moment, 12 years later? Well, as I have briefed you for months, Europe's economy is collapsing into a recession. And that's because they don't have enough cheap electricity. We are watching energy-heavy industries like aluminum and glass and fertilizer all shut down. Coal plants, on the other hand, are firing back up. People are being asked to take shorter showers, turn down their thermostats. It is a disaster. And let me just underline the point here. Remember when I said that I would keep you posted when Paris shut off the lights to the Eiffel Tower? Now, I got some emails from listeners saying that I was being a little bit over the top. Well, yesterday, the mayor of Paris announced that starting September 23rd, the Eiffel Tower's lights will go dark at 11:45 p.m. Normally, it's 1 a.m. The mayor said that she made this decision to conserve electricity because the tower has 20,000 lights and France is running short of energy. My point, folks, is this. You are being sold dirty green energy as both clean and reliable. This week's series has hopefully shown you that it's certainly not the former. It is not purely clean. There are profound dirty costs from environmental, humanitarian, and national security. And now what we see from our friends in Europe is that it's not reliable either. After 10 plus years of deep commitment to renewable investments in solar and wind, industries throughout Europe are shutting down. Lights are shutting off. And I will tell you, sadly, folks, you will read about people freezing to death this winter in Europe because they don't have enough energy. So if you were president, my energy recommendation to you would be this. Let's learn from Europe. Stick with traditional energy. Now, I know that that will be upsetting to some people, but remember, all energy sources have costs. None of them are without risks or problems. And when it comes to traditional energy, it has become much cleaner over the years. In fact, our carbon dioxide emissions have actually gone down. You know, and maybe at some point, we can make renewable energy less dirty, more reliable, and built here in America. And I earnestly hope that we can make that happen. Personally, I would love to see no more exhaust from cars, just as one example. But until then, it's just not worth the gamble. Just ask the people of Paris at 11:46 p.m. in a week's time. Just bring a flashlight when you do. Because when the mayor throws off the lights, it's going to be awful dark. And with that, we are going to skip listener questions today for an important update on the possible railroad strike. But I would ask you, if you liked this week's series, or if you have feedback, send me an email. The address, as always, is pdb@thefirsttv.com. Again, that's PDB, like the show's initials, @thefirsttv.com. We'll be right back.